Well, good morning again. How many of you are familiar with the year 1994? Well, 1994, recording artist Sheryl Crow came out with a song called All I Want to Do. That was the name of the song. And it peaked at number 2 on Billboard's charts. One of the lyrical keys in the song is the phrase, all I want to do is have some fun, and I've got a feeling I'm not the only one. The song is right. She's not the only one. I think it's safe to assume that most of us want to have fun in life. Most of us want to increase the fun factor in our lives. The challenge for some of us is we don't know how. It seems we've lost our way in knowing how to have fun. One of the other things is that sometimes it seems like we need permission to have fun. Like maybe it's been so ingrained and instilled in us that life is serious that we no longer have fun or feel that we have permission to have fun. And here's the thing, life is serious. There are serious parts of life, serious parts of life that we have to navigate, and serious parts of life that we have to deal with, and all of that. But I don't know about you, but if you ever noticed that even in the serious parts of life, that there are pockets of joy, and that it is possible to still have fun, even in the serious parts of life? What if this desire to have fun, there is within each of us an innate desire to have fun. And what if that innate desire to have fun is placed in us by God? Because what if, though we are often taught that there is a serious and stoic side to God, and there is, and that serious and stoic side to God is almost always directly connected to sin. But what if this innate desire is put in us by God because God is a God of fun? What if God enjoys having fun? What if God enjoys seeing us have fun in life? If we need any further evidence that God is a God of fun, we just need to look at Jesus' pattern of life. Jesus had fun. He frequently went to parties. And not only did he frequently go to parties, but there was actually a party that got a little bit boring, so Jesus took water and turned it into wine. At a wedding feast, Jesus invited the little children to come with him, to come and be with him. And I don't know about you, but when Jesus invited the little children to come and be with him, in the context that story is told, I don't imagine that he invited them to come and sat them down in a circle around him and then pointed his finger at him and told him all the things. I think the reason that the disciples were upset that the children were coming to him is because the children were being disruptive to the adults, who were convinced that life is all serious all the time. And the kids are running around and they're having fun and they're laughing and they're playing. And the adults in the crowd are going, now you stop that. Don't do that. You're interrupting. Don't stop having fun. And Jesus says, hold on a minute. Hold on. These are kids. And what do you expect kids to be? We expect kids to be little micro adults, to do what adults do and act like adults do. And good Lord, heaven forbid that some of these kids act like some adults. And Jesus said, how about we just expect kids to be kids? How about we let them have fun and then we draw some of that fun into our own hearts and experience a pocket of joy in the midst of the seriousness of life? How about we just let kids be kids? And a lot of the religious leaders of the day looked around at Jesus and said, "You're out of your mind. Not only do we not want kids to be kids, but we don't want you hanging out with those kind of people." Jesus hung out with people that were despised by the Jewish religious leaders of his day, and the Jewish religious leaders of his day didn't like him doing it, and they didn't like him for doing it. And so Jesus is getting criticized for having fun with people. He's interacting with people who were considered the outcast of his day, people who weren't having the kind of fun the Jewish religious leaders thought should be fun, because life was serious and stoic, and you just weren't allowed to have fun. And they're criticizing Jesus. And in response, Jesus tells three stories. And in those three stories, there is a connection to us and our lives and our permission to have fun. And not only is there that connection, but there's a connection to God being a God of fun. The three stories, one of them most of us are familiar with, but the other two kind of sometimes, well, the other two sometimes kind of get a little bit lost, and one gets a little more important. But in these three stories, they all tie together, and they tie together from just some incredibly fascinating angles. You could probably look at these three stories and connect different perspectives through. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at these three stories, and we're going to connect it to permission to have fun and to God being a God of fun. In the first story that Jesus tells, he tells the story about a shepherd who lost one sheep out of 100. Now, that's not a bad percentage. That's just 1%. I only lost 1% of the sheep. But the shepherd leaves the 99 and goes and finds the one. In the second story, he tells the story about a woman who lost one out of her 10 coins. And when she lost one out of her 10 coins, she went to great lengths to find that coin. I would imagine that for the shepherd who lost a sheep and the woman who lost a coin, that in the midst of those circumstances, the fun factor was not real high. I think this was one of those serious moments in life. The shepherd finds the sheep. The woman finds the lost coin. And both stories include a similar statement, one by the shepherd, one by the woman, that make a connection to having fun. And here's what Jesus says they say. He says, "Rejoice with me. I have found what was lost." The shepherd says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep." The woman comes and says, "Rejoice with me. I found my lost coin." The invitation is, let's have some fun. Let's celebrate. The word "rejoice" that's used there is used in such a way that it communicates a sense of joy that you cannot help but share it with others. So they experience this sense of joy, having found what was lost, and they invite others to celebrate and share that sense of joy with them as well. So, oftentimes, for people like us, we wait for someone else to bring the fun. We wait for someone else to bring the joy. And we wait for them to invite us into experiencing the joy and the fun in life. But here's the deal. Why do we have to wait for someone else to have fun for us to have fun? What if we were the fun initiators? What if we were the ones who were committed to having fun in life, and then that was attractive to everybody else, and we invited people? What if whatever's going on in our lives, we were able to find the pocket of joy and then invite someone in? We were the ones to say, "Rejoice with me because I'm experiencing this kind of joy." And I get it. It's tough. You know, there are times. There are times where life just stinks. And it's hard. But even in those times, it is possible to find a pocket of joy. What if, no matter what we were experiencing, what if there was a laugh inside of us that just needed permission to come out? What if there was a laugh inside of us that, when it came out, invited everyone else around us to laugh with us? Now, typically, I find myself in the position where people laugh at me rather than with me. But at some level, I'll take it because we're laughing. Rejoice with me, for I have found what was lost. And then Jesus makes the connection to God being a God of fun. He says, in the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. In the same way. In the same way that a shepherd celebrates when he finds the lost sheep. In the same way that the woman celebrates when she finds the lost coin. In the same way that there is so much joy that they can't help but celebrate it with someone else. They can't help but invite someone into the joy factor and the fun factor with them. In the same way, there is rejoicing in the presence of angels. God rejoices. God celebrates. God experiences a pocket of joy when someone whose relationship with Him that has been broken as the result of sin is restored and redeemed because they place their trust in Jesus. Imagine that. God is a God of fun, and God is a God of joy. But both stories, the lost sheep and the lost coin, end in a similar fashion by saying that God is a God who rejoices. God is a God who has fun. Can you imagine what a party in heaven would be like? Talk about pulling all the stops out. And Jesus says that God throws a party in heaven when somebody places their trust in Jesus. I don't know about you, but that to me is pretty cool. Well, the third story that Jesus tells is, again, one that most of us, or many of us, are familiar with. It's called the story of the lost son. Many of us probably know it by the phrase, the story of the prodigal son. And in that story, we find some fascinating, fascinating things about the fun factor in life. So here's how Jesus starts the story. He says, a father, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So this man has two sons. The younger son comes and says, give me my part of my inheritance. Now, there is debate among scholars. And just so you know, anytime I say there's debate among scholars, basically what I'm saying is there are people who are a whole heck of a lot smarter than I am that don't get this and don't agree on this. Okay? So I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed on some things. But these scholars, some scholars say that this is a perfectly reasonable request. That the son has come of age, he's made a decision to move away from home and go and do life as he chooses to do it. And he is simply asking for what's his. Other scholars say that in that culture, the only reason a son would ask for an inheritance was because a father was abusive or was in failing health. The scholars that hold to this position say that either way, whether it's abuse or failing health, that when the son comes to the father and requests his part of the inheritance. He is basically saying, I wish my father was dead. So the son comes and he asks for his inheritance. Now, I'm not 100% sure how I would respond to that request, especially if the request is motivated by the latter reason that my son wished I was dead. But here's how Jesus tells us this father responds. It says, so he divided his property between them. The father gives the son his inheritance. And when the father gives his son his share of the inheritance, he's giving him permission to leave. He's giving him permission to go and live life on his own terms. He's giving him permission to go and have fun. Even though the father is fully aware that the kind of fun the young son is going to go and seek is not the right kind of fun. And sometimes, when we seek permission to have fun, the fun we seek permission to have is not the right kind of fun. Sometimes we need to be given that permission, and we need to pursue the kind of fun that's the wrong kind of fun long enough to experience the fallout and the consequences of those choices before we understand and before we get it and before we realize that sometimes our perception of fun turns out to be no fun at all. Pouring fun out of you. And then the fun killer showed up. You know? And the whole thing just kind of dies down. You ever been in one of those situations? Like maybe right now. Or have you ever been in one of those situations where the fun is happening and somebody comes in and they bring an additional layer of fun and the fun factor just continues to increase? Which of those two scenarios do we prefer? We prefer the one where the fun increases rather than gets just sapped right out, right? Right? So, Jesus then tells us where this landed the young man. This is after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. He had spent everything, and there was no hope on the horizon that it was going to change. There was a famine in the land. He began to be in need. He didn't even know where his next meal was coming from or he was going to have a next meal. And so what he did is he found himself someone who would hire him to tend to pigs. And that was not a glamorous or desirable job, especially if you were a Jewish person. In the Jewish law, the pigs were considered unclean. And so they basically had nothing to do with them. You couldn't eat a pig. You didn't associate with a pig. You know, you just had nothing to do with them. And so this young man finds himself in a situation where he has to provide food, which he doesn't have. He doesn't have food for himself, but he has to provide food for animals that his law considers unclean, doesn't allow him to eat, doesn't allow him to associate with, but yet he has to feed them. And he gets to the point where he says, I wish I could just eat the food I feed the pigs. The detestable, disgusting animal that my law doesn't even view as clean, I'd like to eat their food. This is how the Jewish people viewed people in the context of this. They actually had a saying that went something like this. Let no man associate with an outcast, not even to bring them to the law. Think about that. Let no one associate with someone unclean, like a pig, not even to bring them to the law. Do you see the ramifications of that? Don't go connect with those people, even if it's to bring them to God. This young man pursued his version of fun in the context of this and wound up with nothing. Let not a man associate with the wicked, not even to bring him to the law. Thank you for having that up there. I know that slide was way, way early in the presentation. It was supposed to be like the first slide. And I went to the passage first instead of that one. So thanks for finding that. And at some point, the guy begins to reflect on his pursuit and perception of fun and says, man, this isn't any fun at all. This guy's refrain was no longer, all I want to do is have some fun, which is what it was when he left, right? It's, all I want to do is preserve my life at any cost, even if that means feeding the pigs. You see where the pursuit of the wrong kind of fun led him? And he says, man, I thought home at dad's was no fun. This is really no fun. Maybe I'd be better off to go back home. And here's what Jesus says. When he came to his senses, I love that. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. When this young man had reached no fun out, no fun in, no fun left, he realized that life at dad's, in the context of the purposes and parameters of dad, wasn't as no fun as he thought. He said, hey, even they have food. I have nothing. And he said, maybe I should go home. And so he makes the decision to go home. And I love what happens next in the story. So he got up and went to his father. And one of the things I find interesting about that is he went to his father, whom he had dishonored and disgraced by asking for his inheritance. But yet when he realized where life had taken him, he wanted to go back to his father. He said, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. It was considered undignified for a man in the first century culture to run, especially an older man. But I love this part of the story because his father saw him from a long way off, which, again, I may be reading into the story a little bit, but if his father saw him from a long way off, I kind of get the sense that maybe his father was looking for him. This isn't in the story. This is how the story goes in my head. I imagine that dad sitting on the front porch every day, rocking in that rocking chair, looking out into the distance to see if today might be the day my boy comes home, so I can beat the living tar out of him for leaving in the first place. Because in that culture, the disgrace and dishonor that young man brought on his father was punishable by being stoned to death. And so when the dad sees him, instead of preparing for a funeral, His dad is filled with compassion for his son. I suspect that he sees the condition of his son, which we see in a minute. And he's filled with compassion for the son that he loves, the son that he cares about, the son who thought he knew what it was like to have fun, but the dad knew that wasn't the kind of fun he should have. He saw a son who had come to his senses, and he had compassion, and he ran for his son, and he threw his arms around him. And one of the commentators that I read about this is that when he threw his arms around him, it was not only a picture of the love a father has for his son, but it's also a picture of the protection that the father is providing to a son who could be stoned to death for what he's done. And so as the father is embracing the son, he's embracing him not just with his love, but with his compassion and with his protection from those on the outside who would seek to do him harm. Isn't that a beautiful picture? And then he kissed him. He welcomed him. He loved him. And he said, "Welcome home." And then the dad turns to the servants who had food, by the way, and said to them, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. It's likely that this son returned home with tattered, worn, dirty clothes, which is unlike the clothes he wore before he left. And his dad says, bring the best robe, a robe that is meant for celebration, a robe that is meant for a feast, a robe that is meant for fun and joy. He says, bring the best robe and put it on. And I have to wonder if that's the same robe that he wore before. If they brought his robe to him, his feast robe, his celebration robe, if they brought that robe and they put it on, and when they brought that out, the son saw it and was just so glad, so grateful to be home, and realized that maybe things weren't so bad here after all. And put a ring on his finger. The ring would have been a signal of dignity and honor, which the son had lost in his pursuit of wild living, and put sandals on his feet. It's implied that the son came home shoeless, or at the very least, the sandals were so tattered that they needed to be repaired and replaced. And I suspect that if he had shoes on, the shoes he had on were in much less of a condition than the shoes that he had on when he walked away. And bring the fattened calf. The fattened calf would have been enough to feed a bunch of people, including the son who came home because he had no food, and kill it. And then the story goes on. Let's have a feast and celebrate. Translation, let's have some fun. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. The translation is, let's have some fun. This is a moment of great fun because this is a moment of great joy. Leading up to this, I imagine that the dad's heart had been broken, not knowing where his son was or what his son was doing, but fully aware of the intention when the son left. But now is a moment, a pocket of joy to celebrate. Well, there's more to the story, because remember when Jesus started the story, he said there was a man who had two sons. So what's going on with the other son? Jesus tells us what's going on. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. So there's this great celebration taking place. And the older son isn't even aware of it because he's out in the field. He's doing his job. He's focused on the responsibility side of life. And the responsibility side of life is important, right? We all have responsibilities. But even in the midst of the responsibilities that we carry, it's possible to find pockets of joy. It's possible to make those responsibilities fun. Well, the older son is so consumed with the responsibility side of life that he isn't even aware there's a party going on. But when he hears the party, when he hears the celebration, he's told that the reason for the party is that his brother, who had left, came home. And here's how Jesus tells us the older brother responds. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So I imagine that whoever it is that the older brother asked what the party was for said, hey, the party's for your brother who came home. You should come in and say hi to him. And the older brother said, uh-uh. The older brother gets angry and refuses to go in and be a part of the fun. And I think one of the most compelling parts of this story is how anger kept the older son from having fun. And I think sometimes for people like us, or at the very least for people we know, I think it becomes so easy to live in a sense of almost unidentified and unrecognizable anger that the fun factor in life is completely taken away. So the older brother refuses to go in. And Jesus then tells us, so his father went out and pleaded with him. This is the same dad. This is the same dad who ran to meet his younger son. The same dad who showed compassion. The same dad who showed honor to the younger son who had left and come. And he goes out and he pleads with the older brother. The same dad showing the same compassion, showing the same dignity, the same honor to the older brother that he was showing to the younger brother. And pleads with him to come in and join the fun. But apparently, the younger brother will have none of it. Because here's how he responds to his dad. Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. All these years. There's a ton of stuff to commend the older brother for. He was always there. He did what was asked. He fulfilled his responsibilities. Never gave his dad a problem. And apparently he even had enough friends to have a party with, but he never got anything to celebrate with. So what happens next in the story? But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. Now, this is fascinating because the older brother is angry at the younger brother and angry at the dad. Notice that he calls him this son of yours. Doesn't call him by name. Doesn't say, when my brother, doesn't even acknowledge that he's his brother. Perhaps maybe has even disowned him as a brother. And says he squandered your property, which is part of what leads the one scholars to believe that he asked for what was not his in a disgraceful and dishonoring way. And he said, you kill the fattened calf. it seems that the older brother is just as angry with the dad as he is with the son. And sometimes one of the challenges we face is when we perceive that other people have had more fun than we've had, we get angry. We resent them. But when we find out that that fun has been allowed or enabled, we get upset with the people who allowed it. How could they let their kid do that? How could they, isn't that what happens? Man, their kid just went wild. How could they? Have you ever noticed that sometimes we don't have control over what our kids do? You ever realize that sometimes we can't force our kids to make the decisions we want them to make? And so when we see them off in the distance coming home after a season of life that they shouldn't have lived, we're going to beat the tar out of that kid when they walk in this door. Or do we run and meet them with compassion? Because they came to their senses. Sometimes all on their own without our help. So, the dad continues the conversation. He says, "My son, you are always with me. And everything I have is yours. You are always with me." This moment right now is a moment of celebration because your brother who was lost is home again. This is a moment. But every moment that you've been with me is a moment of joy. Every moment is a pocket of joy. Every moment is a moment of fun. It may have seemed like it was taken for granted, but every moment is a moment to celebrate with you and me. And everything I have is yours. When the dad divided up the estate for the younger boy to take, according to the Jewish custom, 2/3 of the estate would have gone to the older son, and 1/3 would have gone to the younger son. And then, after the inheritance had been given to the younger son, everything that was accumulated after that, 100% of it, would have gone to the older son. The younger son would have gotten nothing more than the third he got at the time. But then he came home. And I wonder if the older brother is angry because as lavishly and as graciously as the dad welcomed the younger son home, he wonders now if whatever will be accumulated will be divided as well. And so I wonder if the older brother is angry that he left or angrier that he came back. And the dad says, every moment is a moment of joy for us. This moment is a moment of great joy because your brother's come home. And then he says, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours, notice the difference? He didn't say this son of mine. He said this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And so he turns to the son and he said, come on, make it fun. We had to do this. We couldn't help, we couldn't not do this. So come on, make it fun. Life's too short. Life's too short to be so angry that the fun factor disappears. Life's too short to not identify and recognize the moments, the pockets of joy when life is so serious. And life is serious. And the Father says, make it fun. there is within us, each and every one of us, an innate desire to have fun. Because God put it there. Because God is a God of fun. And sometimes we may not know how to have fun. Sometimes we may just need permission to have fun. But here's the deal. You have permission to have fun. You have permission. Go ahead, tell yourself that right now. Just say, I have permission to have fun. I'm not convinced. One more time. In the meantime, here are three questions to get the conversation going or keep the conversation going. You're going to go to lunch somewhere with someone. You may go home. You may go by yourself. I don't know. You're going to go to lunch somewhere with someone, and I know you're going to talk about something. So here's what I'd like you to talk about at lunch rather than whatever else you were going to talk about. What are some ways people do and don't give themselves permission to have fun and experience joy in life? Who in the story of the prodigal son do you most relate to? I love that question. Do you relate more to the lost son who went off and squandered things and then came to his senses and realized, oh my gosh, I made a mistake? Or do you relate more to the father? Or do you relate more to the older son? Just fascinating. I love that question. I wrote it. I love it. What are some things we're celebrating in your life? So, three questions. Take those questions with you. Talk about them over lunch rather than whatever else you were going to talk about. And see where the conversation lands and how maybe those questions help you take a next step in your relationship with God and a next step in your ability to make it fun. There are more questions in the Next Step Conversation Guide out in the on the website, right? Yep, they're out on the website. And they'll also be included in the email that will come into your inbox on Wednesday. If you don't receive that email and you'd like to, contact the church, hello@hurricanecommunity.church, to be added to that list, and we'd be happy to add you to that list. All right? Thank you for choosing to spend this part of your day with us. For those of you who are here in person, thank you for getting out and coming in. And for those of you who are watching online, thank you for choosing to connect with us. And we would love to have you join us in person as well at some point. So let me pray as we close out our time together, and then you can go ask these three questions at lunch. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this incredibly powerful story that Jesus told. Actually, three stories that Jesus told back to back to back to make the same point. It actually makes tons of points, but to make the point that you are a God of fun and that you desire for us to have fun. You desire to rejoice with us and rejoice because of us and to rejoice in us. God, help each and every one of us to identify a pocket of joy in the midst of life, which can be very, very serious, and a way to make it fun. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. So we'll roll a preview for next week. When the preview is over, you're dismissed. Have a great rest of the week, and thank you again for being here.